Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Welcome one and all to Storybox, the place to be if you are a lover of stories, learning, growth, and you want to improve your life. My name is Jay Phantom, and I've made it my purpose to unbox and share the amazing stories from people of every profession all over the world. I am truly grateful that you have decided to listen in today. Now let's journey into the story box together and hear more about whose story will be unboxed today. It's a big week for the Storybox podcast. If you haven't listened to my interview with Matthew McConaughey yet, make sure that you do. It's available on any podcast platform. Just search up Matthew McConaughey and the Storybox podcast and you'll be able to find that episode. I had a lot of fun doing it. But today I thought I would release another famous actor, someone that I have admired from all of her movies, and I guarantee you're going to love this person. You've definitely heard her in some movies because she has a very iconic voice, very deep, very husky, but it grips you. And her presence in movies, it really keeps you hooked. So my next guest for you guys today is none other than Sheree Agdashalu. Now, you've probably seen her in Star Trek Beyond, The Expanse, which is a hit TV show now on Amazon Prime, House of Sand and Fog, The Promise, Last Night, Percy Jackson, she played a voicing role in that one, The Lake House with famous Keanu Reeves and Sandra Bullock, X-Men The Last Stand, and many, many more movies and TV shows that I could mention, but for sake of time, I won't. She is also an Oscar nominee and Emmy Award-winning actress, which is another incredible added feat to her ever-growing list of accomplishments that this incredible woman does. She's an activist too. Her story is unreal. She's also written a best-selling book titled The Alley of Love and Yellow Jasmines. And I highly encourage you to get that book as well because it is a deep dive into her life. And my goodness, if you guys don't feel like you should get the book after listening to this episode of what this incredible woman went through, then far out. But trust me, this woman's story will keep you gripped, hooked. It did for me. She has a lot of advice, a lot of wisdom, and she's lived a lot and given back so much. She is such a kind, humble spirit with an immense cheerfulness about life, you could say. And she just has a real passion for helping people. And it was a real honor to actually speak to Sheree. We had a fun conversation that I know you guys are going to love. But so if you do get something from it, share it around to your friends and family. Please don't forget to leave a rating and review over on Apple Podcast. Goes a long way in building this incredible community. I am grateful for each and every one of you that continue show up each and every week, and I hope you guys are enjoying the conversations that are being had, being shared on the story box. You guys know what time it is right now. It's time to dive into the story box and listen to the incredible story of Sheree Agdashalu.
More and more people are now tuning in. They're finding out that, I mean, we kept saying this is such a timely and relative TV series. But because of its title, science fiction, people are afraid to watch it. And we encourage people to watch it and make them sure that it's not as complicated or not as shallow as other science fiction stories that you have seen before. So just try it out. Mm. And now more and more people are joining in, and they are all collectively saying that, you guys were right. It is like today's world. It is timely.
Do you look at the ratings much at all, or you just look at what people are actually saying, like their actual audience?
I read everything. I read every comment, as much as I can. When I do live tweets, I do get involved with our fans. I love the interaction with our fans because, again, when it's the interview is done in a video shape of video, people can see you, can relate to you. Same thing with our fans. When we interact with them, they realize that as much as they like the show, we like them even more for watching the show and for giving us the opportunity to carry on with the show. And in fact, twice the show was saved by its fans. First time was on its third anniversary, when NBC decided that they were no longer going with the show and we were almost canceled. We got calling each other, telling each other, oh my God, especially young people on the show, they were really afraid of losing the show. I'm the eldest one of them all. So I kept telling them, you know what, according to my experience in life, when a chapter is closed, the other chapter opens up. So let's look forward to the future. Finally, I received a text message along with a picture of a plane carrying a message, "Save the Expanse," it said. I called friends. I said, "I know we're not doing this. Who is doing this?" They said, "Fans." They put their pennies, dollars together, send the balloon up and got us Amazon. And I always make a little joke about this, that they send it to the Amazon's headquarters purposefully and had it go around the Amazon's headquarters for Mr. Bezos to see it and say, "What? This show is going to be canceled? No way. I want to see the rest of it. Hello, Alcon. I want to see the rest of the show." And that was it. We were on Amazon. And I cannot even tell you how happy I was when we shifted into Amazon, because I kept thinking, this show is one of the most inclusive shows of all the shows that I've ever been a part of or I have watched or are the existing ones. So, and it's about the people of the world. It's not about a certain nation or why can it not be told to the people of the world? When we went to the Amazon, I didn't have to tape the shows and send it to my mother in Iran or send it to my brother in the UK or have my cousins wait for it in Italy. Now we all watch it simultaneously. The whole world. Now I get messages from Iran. A young man your age is telling me, "Why do I feel that I am in Eris?" And I said, no. You're on Earth and we are going to see each other very soon. So it is now global, as it had to be from day one. But I guess everything that we do needs to progress. And this is what happened to the show, rightfully, because it deserved it.
I think you're right. It really did deserve not to stop. It deserved to keep on going. Yeah. And I'm glad that it did, because it is a great show.
Something funny I have to tell you, really interesting. Day one, when they took us for a tour, before we start season one, they took us for a tour of the set. I looked at the shuttle and they had us walk two by two. I was with Wes Chatham, one of my favorite actors of all times. So we're both walking and I'm looking at the shuttles and I'm looking, I mean, everything is manual. Usually, you know, they leave these things for CGI, but these are all manual, practical. And then I looked at the wardrobes and I turned to Wes and I said, "Minimum of 5 or 6 years." He's looking at me and we don't even know each other that well. And he goes, "Excuse me?" I said, "They are saying that it's only for 1 year. But in my opinion, in my belief, minimum of 5 to 6 years." My God. Wes is still saying it. He imitates my accent, "Minimum of 5 or 6 years." How did you know? I said to him, after working for 48 years, when I read a story or when I look at the set or the location. It feels like this is a story that wants to be told.
Yeah.
This is a story wanted to be told and didn't want to stop, wanted to finish the story.
Mm.
And it's happening against Mother Nature's negation, against all the odds, you know. It's happening. Yeah. We are on our last season now. We are telling the story till the end, of novel six.
Mm. So season six will be the complete finish. Yes. No more after that.
Well, let me tell you something. I told you again. Tell me. Like, Wes, why do I have a feeling this is not the end?
Mm.
I don't know.
Well, in show business, they say nothing is ever the end. Like, you can, there's endless creative possibilities, endless roads that you can go down. So I don't think any sort of film, unless a studio decides, hey, I'm going to say no, then you can keep on going. Like, I think it's also, I think what show was I watching recently that they went for 8 or 9 seasons and they only thought that I'd get to 2. So, like, it had this massive fan base and just kept on going, like, because they loved it. So, and even the cast members, they just kept on coming back because they loved the experience and it became like this family for them. Yeah. So I hope it does keep going, not just for your sake, but also for the audience that absolutely loves the show. And because it's one of those shows, and for me, when I watch a show, I normally stop at like season 2, because it gets very repetitive after that, like with plots and themes and everything. But then what I've noticed for this one is I'm up to season 3 at the moment and I love it. Like, I'm ingrained with the characters, the plots, the message, everything about it. I'm hooked. So, and that's partly for you as well, Sheree, because I'm a bit of a fan of you and your work, if I can say that.
You just made my day.
Sorry?
You just made my day. Thank you.
You're more than welcome. Like, you made, like, when I saw you in the Lighthouse, the Lake House with Keanu Reeves and Sandra Bullock. I mean, you had a smaller role, but you still stood out to me. And I'm like, okay, where else have I seen this lady before? And then X-Men, and then like so many other movies, and even more recently Star Trek Beyond as well. Yes. I just turned to my dad and I said, I love that lady's like charisma and her voice as well. It stood out. And I didn't even know back then when I saw it that one day I'd actually get the opportunity to speak to you. So
I'm so happy.
Thank you. this is going to be a fun conversation. We've already had a very enriching time together. And the first question, or more or less like the other question that I want to ask you, Sheree, is you've had all this great achievement in your career, you could say. But what I'm curious about is, what does success look like to you?
Success means arriving at the point that you have aimed for. Say, I want to become an actor and I have to do something for it, right? I start looking up for an audition. I'll go to the audition. I do the audition. I come home and I'm waiting for the answer. They call me and they tell me, you've been accepted. Would you like to come in and sort everything out? That is success, arriving at the point that I have aimed for.
When was the moment for you that you realized that this was success for you? Has it been this gradual thing over time that you've arrived at these specific points in your life that you've realized, oh, that's success for me? Or is there this catalyst moment somewhere in your life?
You take accounts of your successful moments in life. So when you're get to my age, you won't become grumpy old woman. You're like, because you've taken account of your successful moments. And it's not just once or twice. For example, I was successful in leaving Iran, driving myself to the UK, going from Tehran to Istanbul to Yugoslavia, back then it was Yugoslavia, to Venice, south of France, Paris, Calais, London, selling my car, my jewelry, going to university, start studying international relations, political science. When I sat on that chair at the university, in my first class, started listening to the professor who was trying to teach us, I felt ever so successful that I cannot even tell you how happy I was. And I still remember that day. I kept moving because I was 27 years old then. I had not been to school for almost 8 years. I got my diploma when I was 18 years old. So it was hard. I was an adult, really, starting university. When I was listening to it was one of the happiest moments in my life, and that happiness was derived from the fact that I felt successful. It was hard when I was in Iran. I kept crying and talking to my dog, Pasha, a German shepherd, smarter than I was. We would sit in front of each other. I would look at his eyes and his proud ears, and I would say, Pasha, I have to leave. I cannot take you with me. The destination is unknown. Mm. And tomorrow, God knows what happens tomorrow. Forgive me if I have to leave you behind, but you're going to stay with my mother-in-law and the good, nice family. I don't want to take you through this trip because I don't know what's going to happen to me. It started like this. And then going through the revolutionary roads of Iran, being thrown, stones at your car and stuff. They broke my window, the back window, and a shield. And finally get yourself to Turkey, and still you feel like, my God, I'm running away from a revolution. All this with just $700 in your pocket.
What? That is...
So imagine, when I sold my car, when I sold my jewelry, I knew when I sold my jewelry, I took all of them except for a couple of them that I had sentimental values for. When the guy, he made me wait for like an hour, the jeweler, looking at everything, clothes, and finally, he gave me a price that was 1/10 of the real price of the jewelry. But I couldn't care less. I remember myself. I pushed all the jewelries. He pushed them towards me and he said, this is how much I pay. And if you leave my shop and come back again, I won't pay you the same. And pushed it in front of me. One glance, I turned around, pushed them towards him, and I said, give me the check. And I was dancing, tiptoeing to the bank. I couldn't care less. I just wanted to study. I wanted to understand what was happening in Iran and why a revolution all of a sudden. And get myself educated and learn the language. So that first day, which I'm still, remember, which I still remember, because I put it in my into my successful account, that my first success. I'm sitting here against all odds, and I'm getting myself educated. No matter what.
That is an incredible story. It sounds like you've come from great, I guess you could say, great trouble, and you've made something of yourself. Like, it's incredible to hear that. I had no idea about that. If it's
I went to the first demonstration in Iran, the first democratically drawn demonstration, pro Mr. Bakhtiar, the prime minister at the time, at the Baristan Square, which when Tahrir Square in Egypt, when everybody started gathering at Tahrir Square, it reminded me a lot of Baristan Square, where we saw our first democratical rally, demonstrations. We were stoned by the fanatics. standing on the pavements. My head broke, and it took 12 stitches. So I knew there was no place for an outspoken young actress like myself in that country. I had to get out, get myself educated, so I could not only help myself, but also my people, and further, whoever I can.
What made you want to be a political activist in that kind of way in your country?
What took place in Iran? Overnight, the whole country was turned back for almost 1,000 years. It was, say, we're in 20th century, it was turned back into the 1300s. All those revolutionary nights where the electricity was gone after 8, you could hear people on the roofs calling for God, Allah Akbar. Those revolutionary nights were the most scariest time of my life, thinking, what is happening to my country? What is happening to Tehran? Tehran used to be the Paris in the Middle East. What is happening? I have a feeling that if people like myself, my generation, was not so politically illiterate, we would have not left Baharistan Square. Just like the youngsters in Egypt who did not left Tahrir Square for a couple of days until they got what they asked.
Were there any moments during that period that you did think that you might actually die because of what was going on?
Many times. There was shooting on the streets. I never forget this. It was like 1 p.m. I stopped by the light. I heard bullets. I looked around hurriedly to see if it's aiming me, because I could hear it. I saw two young men, one is hitting the other. Bend your head down, bend your head down. They're shooting. Hassan, Hassan, bend your head. It was like a joke. Go home, young man. They're shooting you. Oh my God. When a couple of houses down there gets invaded and all the people are out and, you know, they're beating them to death. That is a revolution.
How old were you when that was all taking place?
If you don't mind. Sorry?
How old were you when that was all taking place, if you don't mind me asking?
27.
Wow. And so you decided to escape all that by getting in your car with $700 in your pocket. You sold all your jewelry.
Yeah.
And you traveled out of the country. Did you know where you wanted to go? Did you have like a plan later?
Yes. My aunt was in London.
Yep.
And I had traveled. Thank God for my mother. God rest her soul. She was an avid reader and she was in love with Western literature. Imagine, I'm 7 years old. It's all about Daphne, Charlotte, Emily, Bronte sisters, Jane Austen, Pride and Prejudice. She loved Western literature. She traveled to Europe when I was a child. But when I was 16 years old, she took me. She started taking me with her. So I had traveled to London a lot. I had stayed with my aunt in the summers. My aunt lived in London. So my mother called me and said, if you ever decide to leave, your aunt is saying that she would love to have you. And that's all I needed to hear.
Did you ever want to bring your family over with you? Like,
I did.
Yeah.
I did. I brought my three brothers out. It was difficult. First one is really a genius. It didn't take me long to get him an acceptance from Oxford University. He wanted to study his PhD at Oxford. And wow. His grades were above normal. They were all A straight, so went straight into Oxford. The second one, unfortunately, had some problems, was jailed, and then we got him out. The third one, yes, again, I had some problems getting him out, but I got all of them out. One is a doctor in San Diego now. The other one is an architect in London. And the third one is an IT in Honolulu.
My goodness. And you are a movie star.
I'm just a humble actress.
You are very humble. And I want to ask you, was it before you left your country of Iran that you wanted to be an actor? Did you know what you're going to do when you left your country and you moved to England?
Oh, yes. I was already a successful actress by then. Ah. I tell you what happened. When I was 5 or 6 years old, I loved to imitate people. I would look at people and then immediately would like imitate them. And I would show it to my mom and say, "Mommy, mommy, auntie acts like this." And she goes, "Shh, don't look at me." After a while, the family found out that I had this talent. So, and we are a large family. So every time on Fridays, equivalent of Sundays, we used to get together, either at my aunt's house, homes, or our home. After lunch, when everybody was content with the food and the drink, they would say, "Now let's bring Shohreh in," and she would imitate us. And I would go in, stand in the middle of the room, and start doing my uncle, my aunt, my. And I was doing such a great job to the point that my uncle called my mom and said, "Please ask Shohreh not to do me anymore." He had this bad habit of picking his nose, but he made sure that no one was looking and then he would go for it. But I had caught him, so he didn't like the idea. But it started like that, but I had no idea that I was an actor. I was born an actor. So I was 16 years old. We were in the Caspian Sea, staying with my uncle and his daughters, 6 daughters, in a ranch, very much like Pride and Prejudice, you know, the girls. Mm-hmm. So, my uncle took us to see a movie. Guess what it was? Gone with the Wind. I was 16 years old.
And you were hooked from that moment on. It's like, I need to make this my career from then on. So did you go to, like in Iran, did you go to acting school at all to become trained?
I turned to my mother in the interval and I said, "This is it. I am going to be an actress." She said, "Not under our roof."
Oh, no.
Oh, my God. First, you have to get yourself educated. Mm. Okay. So I started studying. And when I was 18 years old, 3 or 4 months prior to getting my diploma, I met with a gentleman at a party who had just gotten back from Europe. And he started talking, and I noticed, my God, he's an intellectual. My God, he knows so much. He's got this European-Iranian behavior, which I love the combination of them both. It's like, and I started dating him, and he asked for my hand. And I was very, very straightforward with him, as I am always. I don't like to beat about the bush. When he asked for my hand, I said, "I want to be an actress." And he goes, "I don't see anything wrong with that." So I married him. 1 week after, one of his friends said, "Oh, by the way, I know Shohreh likes to become an actress. City Theatre is now auditioning for a role in a play called The Narrow Road to the Deep North. The Narrow Road to the Deep North by Edward Bond. They're looking for the lead actress if she would like to do an audition." And I went for an audition. And after the audition, they asked me to wait. And I told myself, I was waiting for like 10 minutes. In that 10 minutes, which felt like 10 years, I kept telling myself, "Woman, get yourself out of here. You're no good. That's why they're not coming. They're waiting for you to leave so they don't have to tell you to leave." And while quarreling with myself, the head of the drama workshop that was doing the audition and came to me and said, "My dear, who are you? You're amazing. can you start next week? And I'm like, yes. And he's like, okay, good. Then we start next week. And we can give you 700 tuman per month. 700 tuman was like $700 then. And I'm like, the money is no objection. I don't care about the money. And he goes, but young lady, you should. I'm like, no. It's acting. I want to act. It's acting. Acting is important to me. I flew out, flying home. All of a sudden, I remember, oh my God, I'm not a single person. I'm married. I should have asked him first. I got home, hurriedly opened the door, got in. He was standing in the middle of the room. He looked at me. He saw me and he said, what is the matter with you? And I'm like, I didn't dare to say anything. And he said, they want to start early? I said, because the poor man has already mapped out our honeymoon in Egypt, Casablanca, Morocco, and Geneva, having a taste of a modern world on our way back. He had already mapped them out. He got our tickets and everything. He said, they postponed. They want to start earlier. And he goes, it's okay, Shoya. Honeymoon can be postponed, but Edward Bond cannot be postponed.
Yes. Wow. This is, I'm loving these stories. These are incredible. One question that I did want to ask you from your response there is waiting and nerves. Do you find that you still get nervous when you go, do you do auditions today, and in those audition processes and actually acting, do you find that you still get nervous in the process?
Tell you the truth, had I not sat on the other side of the table, perhaps I would have still been getting nervous or something. But I would love to share this with your audience, especially actors. The fact that when we go to an audition, we're either it or we're not. It's not personal. It's not about me, Shohre, when they say, no, thank you. It's about it. What happened was, when I was offered a role for Nadi in the House of Sand and Fog, they have already casted the young boy that was supposed to play my son. But according to some problems with him traveling on his own or whatever, they had to start casting a new one. So this one went back to the East Coast where he lived, and we had to cast a new one. The director told me, do you mind sitting next to me, auditioning him? You read the mother's line, so he feels comfortable with you. He doesn't have to read with me. So the director, Vadim Perman, and I are sitting on this side of the table. And the 32 young men who came for audition started coming in, sitting on the chair on the other side of the table. They were doing, more or less, were doing a good job. Until the very last one, what happened? He poked his head in. The door was a bit open. And Vadim and I were talking about the one that we had auditioned before. All of a sudden, he poked his head in and he said, can I come in? We both turned around. I looked at him and I thought, oh my God, he looks like it. That innocent 14 years old boy, very shy, but very polite, that was described in the script, has poked his head in. May I come in? We both said, come in. He sat down, but him told him, you know what, your father is a general, of course. He's got, he's very law-abiding. He's got his own rules and regulations, and you have to listen to him. Sometimes he just, you know, may raise a hand, but obviously you're afraid, but he's not going to hit you. And then we started the audition. Seconds, we are going into it. I'm reading with him, and I'm feeling like, my God, his name is Jonathan. Jonathan, it's it. And then Vadim raised his hand, and he goes, Second letter, I tell him something and he's listening. He's listening to me. And oh my God, the audition ends. Now his mother, Jonathan's mother, pokes her head in. Hello, they're Iranians. Soon as she sees me, she goes, Salam alaikum, how are you doing? I say, I'm fine, thank you so much. She says, I'm so sorry. And she leaves. So we ask Jonathan to leave. Vadim and I are looking at each other in awe of him. Vadim says, which one? I said, are you kidding me? Jonathan. He goes, why? I said, first of all, you and I know he is it. Second of all, he was listening. Third of all, did you see his reaction? Just raise your hand and he went. And he said, that's who I have in mind as well. I just wanted to see what you say. I thought you're a friend of his mother. I said, no, I'm a well-known person in the Iranian community. His mother knew all of me. We don't know each other. I'm not trying to, you know, pull nepotism here. The guy is it. And he got the role.
So having said all that, what have you noticed, in your opinion, over the years, separates a mere good actor from the great actor? In your opinion?
Oh, what a great question. I thank you for asking this question, honestly. Very easy. What is the difference between a bad job and a good job? Actually, let me elaborate on this. What is the difference between a bad job, medium job, good job, perfect job? The only difference is details.
Yes.
If you show me a fully dimensional character with all its details, I am going to invest myself in your acting. Like, one of the best examples of this year's acting for me is Juliana, who's portraying Margaret Thatcher in The Crown, season 4. I cannot even tell you how much I enjoy her acting, even her neck movement. This actor must have studied Margaret Thatcher, and I can tell because I'm a Margaret Thatcher fan. Mm-hmm. I was at the university when Margaret Thatcher was giving her first inauguration. I heard the stampede, and I'm like, my God, there's a revolution in the UK as well. No, they were all going to the canteen to hear her out. And she started with, they call me an Iron Lady. I am an Iron Lady. Tighten your belts. We're going to change Britain for good. So I'm a Thatcher fan. When I see an actor who's done such an amazing job in bringing all the details of this character on the screen and to me, I swear to God, I am more than willing to bow to her and give her my Emmy. If they're not going to give her an Emmy, I will give her my Emmy. Because she's done an incredible job. Details. Don't you think that because you're running the lines, you're doing a great job? No.
I think that's a great answer to the question. My goodness, I did not expect that. I've spoken to a lot of actors, and I do filmmaking. I used to do it as I was growing up. That's all I wanted to be. And I worked with my first ever actors probably about 2017 with my movie. And it was a very unique experience because I had never worked with proper actors before. And the experience of that was watching them read the script and them asking me so many intricate little details about that character. And I was like, oh, I don't have that kind of answer for you. But they wanted to really go deeper into, okay, who is this character? What are they like? What are their motives for doing this sort of thing? And I was like, oh, okay, let me have a deeper think about that and get back to you. But I think you're completely right. And all the actors that I've seen on the screen, even for you, Sheree, whenever I've seen you portray a character, whether or not you're in a supporting role or you're actually in the lead, you always shine out. And I'm the sort of person that sits there and I watch for people that do things very differently. They actually shine above the rest. and you caught my eye very early on, actually. I was like, she's different. And it's the way, it's your charisma, I call it, on screen. The way you portray the character is, it shines out. Like it draws you in. You feel more connected to that character as you're watching the movie play on. I think story is number one, but also secondly, how an actor actually enhances the character to also enhance the story along the way. And I think you're brilliant at that. So I just want to say thank you.
Thank you so much for mentioning that. Thank you. Absolutely. Some actors go as far as Sir Anthony Perkins. They travel. I'm sure you've seen the interview with him about who was it? That the movie Cannibal, that he went like
Silence of the Lambs.
Exactly, Silence of the Lambs. And they asked him how he came up with this idea. And he said, for every film he travels, for every role he travels, and he searched for his character. And he was sitting in a restaurant, and he noticed that a man is eating like this. So he thought, that's perfect. And he does that. What I do, I make resumes for my character. What I do, I write down a background for my character. Like, for, as a matter of fact, for Nadi, she was born in Isfahan, in this ancient city, raised an innocent girl, was married to this general, blah, 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 blah. And then I would put it in page one. Page two, I started gathering, cutting pictures from magazines. This is her bedroom. This is her wardrobe. This is the kind of clothes that she would wear. This is what kind of perfume or cologne that she would wear. And I take it with me to work. House of Silent Fog, I'm going through this. The director comes in and says, what is this? I said, Nadi's resume. He goes through this and I said, cologne? Burberry, sorry? Burberry? I said, yes, she wears Burberry. And he goes, why? I said, she's a square.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it depends on how much you're willing to work on your character. Details, details, details. The more details, obviously, the better outcome.
Yeah.
Look at that neck movement of Margaret Thatcher. That neck movement.
I think you hit the nail on the head. You said it perfectly, especially with one of my all-time favorite actors too, with Sir Anthony Hopkins and his roles. Like Silence of the Lambs blew me away because of the dynamic chemistry he had, not just with his character, but also with Jodie Foster's character as well. It was just perfect, if I can say that.
I'm glad you mentioned this. You know why? Because that's another part of a good acting, interacting. Sir Hopkins is a true actor. Therefore, he knows that interacting is a must. That's why actors, or so-called actors, who dash in with their entourage, perform and leave with their entourage, make me to believe that they do not understand what acting means fully. Mm-hmm. Acting means interacting. If you miss that part or you snub that part, then obviously you're not going to shine. It's in the interacting that the characters start showing us their dimensional, they become fully dimensional. We can get into the depths. If you play your violin and I play my violin, then there is no collaboration here. Then why are we telling the story together?
Exactly.
Yeah, acting, for God's sake.
Have you ever found it a challenge, I guess, being in a supportive role that you sort of want to outshine the main in any way?
I am a trained actor, and I'm very respectful towards my colleagues. I never try to steal a scene from them, but I can't tell you because which film it was, because the actor is very well known, and sometimes it happens. The actor was supposed to open the door. I was behind him, looking at the person who's calling us. And the director said, oh my God, Shore's eyes are shining. And the actor went to him and said, do you mind not having her opening the door with me? And the director came to me and said, I'm sorry, I made a mistake. I referred to her eyes and now he's unconscious. I said, that's good. I don't mind. I don't mind. And it's okay. It's okay. We have to be respectful towards each other, towards each other's feelings, sentiments. So it was okay for me. I didn't have to be with him opening the door.
I think you are a very humble individual, especially in the world of Hollywood where, you know, I guess from the perspective of someone here in Sydney, Australia, they can see the stars, you know, stardom and like they're kind of like idols in a way. Like it's
you see all sorts of actors there.
Yeah.
You see celebrities, you see stars, you see actors who are born actors, you see trained actors, you see performers who love to be actors. They're not actors, but they're great performers. So there are all sorts of actors.
Mm. Yeah. What has been for you the most challenging role to not only prepare for, but actually portray on screen, you think?
The most challenging? Mm-hmm. The Stony Mosaic, because it was based on a true story. When I got to the Stony, when the shooting got to the Stony point, usually they throw these stonings in a cul-de-sac so the person cannot run away. Soon as we got closer to the location, I saw the cul-de-sac, I saw the hole, I saw the people, youngsters, waiting with stones in their hands. I couldn't. I'm usually very professional, but in this case, I couldn't help myself. I started crying. I sat on the ground and I was like crying my heart out. Director came and said, do you need time? I said, no. Let it be my real reaction, Zara's reaction. Because I can't help myself. I'm going to cry. Even if you stop me now, I'm going to start again. Because I know that this took place in my country. And I'm not only embarrassed, ashamed, but also this vengeance, this hate in me is killing me. So I can't stop. Where do we go on? And we did. But we thought it's going to take only 3 days to finish. But it took 5 days to finish. And we were all worried because we were in a village in Jordan with Muslim people, you know. We were Muslim too, but because it was based on, you know, Muslim people are stoning a woman, we were afraid. So every night when I went back to the hotel, we had a nice resort. We were staying at a nice resort hotel. And I had a beautiful room. Night I went to my room and took a shower and went to bed. The moment I felt like I'm going to sleep, I would have this dream of me coming in with sand in my nostrils, going to take a shower. I opened the bathroom and there's an infant dead floating in the tub. And I'm like, oh my God, quick. I would wake myself up sweating. I'm like, Oh my God, what was this? 5 nights under. The stoning scene was finished. We went back to Amman to shoot the rest. The dream was gone. I didn't know what was happening. Years later, when I told the psychologist as to what happened to me, she said, the character was pregnant, wasn't she? And I'm like, oh my God, of course. The woman who was assumed was pregnant. It was the baby, the infant of hers that I saw in my dream, dead, floating in the tub. It was very hard. It was very hard.
Yeah, it honestly does really sound like, yeah. So to wrap this up really nicely, I usually have one final question. It's very, very quick. But just imagine with me for a moment that you've been able to reach the age of 100 and your friends have decided to put together a film for you of everything you've ever said and everything you've ever done. And they've shown it to you on your 100th birthday. Don't ask me how they got all the stuff, by the way. We'll call it magic. But they've shown it to you on your 100th birthday. What do you want that film to say and to show about your life?
That I tried my best to make this world a better place and make myself a better person. And I do apologize if I hurt anyone unpurposefully, not purposefully. I hope I haven't hurt anyone.
That's beautiful. You
know what I mean? And I just hope that I didn't hurt anyone purposefully. That's it. That's all.
I feel the same way. Yeah. I would definitely watch that movie. Yeah. Sheree, I wish we had so much more time because I have a lot more questions for you, but thank you so much for the amount of time that you've given me today. Really enjoy this conversation.
Me too. Enjoyed it so much. Thank you so much for taking up your time, having this conversation with me. I would love to talk to you again. So we can do it when we are closer to season 6.
I don't like this part because it means that sadly we have come to an end of yet another incredible story. I just want to say thank you to all of you for tuning in and listening to our guest today. It is my prayer that you would have felt inspired, motivated, challenged in some way, and that you would have learned something new as well. If you'd like to hear more amazing stories like this one, you can do so now by searching up The Story Box on any podcast platform. It's that easy. If you did get something from our guest today, please share it around to a friend or family member that you think could benefit from hearing this powerful story. And before you go, please leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. It will only take 30 seconds and it'll go towards reaching more people. Let's start changing lives through powerful stories like this one. Your support is greatly appreciated. Until next time, when we dive back into The Story Box, I'm Jay Phantom, and don't forget, your story is worth more than you know. I'll catch you next time.